Thank you once again for tuning into the Psychedelic Podcast. I'm your host, Tina Marie, and I'm here with two of our panel members, Dawn and Rob. Today, we are discussing urban exodus, something that you might have heard of in the recent days, especially during this pandemic. Welcome, everybody. How's everyone doing today or tonight?
I'm doing great, Tina. I am fully relaxed. My kids are asleep and everything is nice and peaceful. So I really couldn't ask for anything more right now.
And I see you eating those candy octopuses. Puzzles.
Octopi.
I went to a candy store when I was down in Myrtle Beach and I spent more than $50 on candy alone. I have no regret.
Can you tell the audience why you're eating so much candy?
To stay awake because I'm pregnant and I'm super tired all the time, but I still have this love and desire for podcasting and for spreading my messages. So candy it is.
All right, Rob?
I'm doing pretty good. Just still trying to get all the insulation from today's work out of my eyeballs and out of my mouth. It's been a daily struggle ever since I started the project. Every morning I wake up and I wipe crusties out of my eyes from the excretions of the previous day. But I got one more day left till I'm done with this project and I can't wait.
Yeah, that's one problem that you might have with homesteading is the dust amounts that come into the house. Do you guys think that the future is in farming and homesteading?
Even if you look at the lockdown, we had a bit of an interruption in our food chain that sent people spiraling. There's a community of people, if y'all don't know about this, called preppers. Most people know about preppers. They're the people that are waiting for the shit to hit the fan.
It already has.
It has multiple times, and it hits the fan all the time. You just can be really good at dodging it, or you can be really well prepared. Some people spend all their money on food stocks and all these other things, but we had an interruption of the food chain and meat plants were shutting down and stuff, and the farmers were like, we're good. People that were homesteading that had been canning for years and raising their own livestock, they were totally fine. Those communities are at least super critical to our future.
Wasn't there a recent point in time that farmers were told to get rid of a bunch of their livestock, especially pigs?
Yeah, I can't remember why that was. All of a sudden, from one day to the next, millions of pigs had to be put down.
Yeah.
And there was a giant uproar about it because not only is that a ton of money down the drain, that's cruel and wasteful.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely both. I don't know who would give their livestock up like that.
Rob, what about you? Do you think the future is in farming and homesteading?
Yes, you can't rely on these big urban city centers to be sustainable when there's life-threatening hysteria going on. Those are the hotspots for all of the diseases.
Yeah.
That's where everything's going to go wrong. That's where the central business districts are located. New York, which was the initial hotspot for COVID in the U.S., has 45% of its jobs within 3 miles of the city center. And in Los Angeles, 45% of jobs are within an 11-mile ring of the city center.
Mm-hmm.
So when a pandemic or some other emergency is happening, people are going to start to flee to suburban areas outside of the city limits and even rural areas. Since Florida is the new hotspot for COVID, Miami being the epicenter, a lot of people are starting to move to more suburban areas like some places in Orlando or more rural areas in Florida.
And to add on to that thought, there's a lot of people coming from California and LA and San Francisco moving to Texas, surprisingly not just to places like Austin and Dallas, but really a lot more of the rural areas, the countryside.
I don't necessarily think that people are entirely concerned about their mortality rates as much as we might have expected. I don't think that people want to leave certain places for the sole purpose of not getting the virus, but they see that they can no longer dine at nice restaurants whenever they want, go to movies or go to nightclubs and bars. All that loses its appeal when you're in the midst of a pandemic.
And I agree with that to some extent, because on all of the social media platforms I'm on, I see a whole lot of people just still going out and doing the same things as if there's nothing going on.
Absolutely. They're going to do it no matter what.
Let's talk a little bit about preppers and how prepared they really were for this. Rob and I were definitely, we're not preppers by any means, but when COVID happened, we already knew it was coming. We knew something was coming. So we were prepared and we went out, we went and grabbed a whole bunch of Vienna sausages. Okay. Dawn, talk to us a little bit about preppers and how prepared they were, really, because there's people that live in silos. They live in it. They don't even have a house. Like, they live in their area in which they prep.
Good for them.
I thought it was pretty interesting to see how preppers responded to COVID lockdown, because the majority of them said, oh, this is really showing me where my preps are lacking, and started sharing a lot of knowledge with each other really quickly about very specific things that they were encountering. Oh, I don't have XYZ for my water purification system. Does anyone have this specific O-ring or tube or whatever it was?
That's funny you say that, because when this thing first started, Tina actually put together this kit that included water purifying tablets along with some lanterns, insulated blankets, as well as a pink taser and an aluminum baseball bat that actually never came. So we were pretty pissed about that.
So the idea was that I would tase an intruder in case of looting, and Rob would knock them out with the baseball bat.
It's a pretty amazing plan. I couldn't have blueprinted that better myself.
Dawn, what did you find the most interesting about the way the preppers handled what was going on?
The thing that shocked me was their emotional response.
What was it?
Because it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. With the lockdown, we also had this rise in Black Lives Matter turned into sort of a gathering of very frustrated people from a lot of walks of life that started to take out their frustrations on those inner cities. And I think that was sheerly from being locked up and being threatened, having their resources taken away and not knowing what was going to happen next. And a lot of people were upset. And the preppers, I thought, were going to be a little bit excited because it looked like this system was collapsing, right?
Y2K all over again.
But really, the response was that they were like, oh my God, no, don't threaten the system. Keep the system intact. This whole urban exodus thing started way before COVID. It was just that it kind of took off right around this time. And I just was kind of surprised that preppers were like, oh no, leave the system alone, not the system. I'm confused.
Right. And urban exodus is not to be confused with white flight.
Yeah, because there's urban flight and then there's white flight, which is different.
Right. White flight happened in the 1950s and 1960s, primarily in cities like Detroit. And you lived in Michigan just recently, Dawn, so you probably know a little bit about the history about this, but white flight happened when segregation had already ended and people, white people primarily, were starting to leave areas in which it was becoming more ethnocentric.
So was that the last big one?
That was the most recent, yes. Right, Dawn?
I think that we can understand the terms if we break them down a bit, because urban exodus really just means a large group of people in an urban area moving from one area to another. Whether that's white people leaving predominantly black neighborhoods or a generation of people leaving the inner cities for country life, it's essentially just people leaving an area for another area. In urban terms, obviously, it has to do with the cities. In a lot of towns and cities across America, you have black neighborhoods and white neighborhoods. This town, for instance, on one side of the tracks is predominantly white. On the other side of the railroad tracks, it's predominantly black. And if you look in Michigan, you can just see it on the census. If you pull up the map, literally 8 Mile is the line where everyone above 8 Mile, 90% are white. And below 8 Mile, to the south of 8 Mile, for the most part, everyone is black. And you can call it segregation if you want to, but essentially that's something that people largely have chosen to do on their own. Some of the neighborhoods that used to be affluent neighborhoods are starting to move away. There's an area in Detroit called Grosse Pointe. The houses are massive. I mean, there's nothing out there for under $300,000. And now there are a ton of houses for sale because there is some crime coming up north down from the southern areas there. This crime is spreading out of the inner city into these gentrified neighborhoods. And those people are leaving because they're saying, well, values of the neighborhoods are going down. They don't have anyone to sell those houses to now.
Predominantly, the reason Robert and I left Austin was for the safety of our unborn child. I didn't feel safe there with the types of people and the smog, drugs, and alcohol all around me. So it really wasn't because of COVID, which we ended up coming back to the same place that we are now after we made another move from the country.
When we stayed where we are now, again, on the ranch, it was more for the protection and the safety of our unborn child. We're back here again, but doing things a little bit differently, and it's because of COVID. We actually packed all of our stuff up and canceled our lease 2 or 3 months early because shit hitting the fan. We were ready to go. We didn't even want to be there anymore. Honestly, it was so depressing.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
There's really so many more people around you, but it's really difficult to find people with the same type of mindset as you. And you know what's really depressing is that, especially when you move a lot, you realize that no matter where you go, you're not going to have as many friends as you wish you could.
To move somewhere based off of you think that you're going to obtain an abundance of relationships is just unrealistic. We thought by moving away from where we were in East Texas the first time, we were going to obtain so many more friendships, and that was kind of one of the missing links of our lives. We ended up having more relationships here than we did when we moved to the Dallas area, and then we eventually came back. I don't think anybody should relocate for social reasons. Your close family is the most important, and your spiritual self, all those things kind of fall into place. That's one of the reasons why we moved. You know, we wanted more things to do. Like I said, all those things that people desire, going to the movies, going to bars and clubs, etc. It's not for me. It's kind of played out. It loses its flavor after a while, especially when you get older. Those days are behind us, and I don't think that that's what's important in life anymore. So we did move back to the country. We realized what was important, which is our relationship, our marriage, our daughter. To be in this high-stress hot spot of a city for a virus was something that we knew was going to happen eventually. And then when it happens, it's like, okay, yeah, now it's like a part of everyday life. It's kind of like, of course that's going to happen. If you kind of think outside the box a little bit and you're not just stuck in the matrix. So you realize these things are going to happen, and then they actually happen. You're like, why didn't I prepare more? Everybody was calling the doomsday preppers crazy lunatics. They're prepared. Those types of people I envy because they actually were smart. They knew something like this is going to happen. To still be just following the herd is just mind-blowing to me that people haven't thought about it a little bit deeper.
I actually put out a questionnaire in the homesteading Facebook groups and asked some people about what changed in their life when they decided to leave the city, because a few people had left. Some people, of course, had grown up in that life and stayed in it and were just connecting with other people to be like, hey, I have chickens for sale or whatever. But some people were actually leaving the city and going to the farm for the first time. One lady that I spoke to had grown up in a farm setting, but then had moved to the city, and her husband were there for a little while. And then they decided that they would rather live out in the country. She lost a lot of friends when she made that lifestyle change, because you gravitate to like-minded individuals. When you decide to make a change like that, it's like what you were saying, Rob, your priorities change. You don't do the same things anymore. You don't enjoy the same activities. Those things that kept you in commonality with others, those things fade away, and then the friendships become meaningless. Right. So when you make a decision like that for your family, you have to make a lot of sacrifices, and some of that is that social life that comes with the city.
Yeah, and to give a little bit of a backstory on that, we took to social media and asked our friends whether they preferred the country or the city life better. And I was actually really surprised to see that a lot of people that I know said country. And if I had asked them a year ago, pre-COVID times, if they would rather live in the country or city, they would have definitely not had that same response. About 85, maybe even 90%, I'm not very good with numbers, did say they wanted to live in the country and preferred the country life over the city life. And there's a lot of reasons why. People that live in the country do have longer lifespans.
It's a healthier life because it's like you were saying, Rob, the cities are stressful. Like, think of how many people live in the city and are like, oh, traffic gives me anxiety, and it's literally the rat race. You get up in the morning, you rush your kids around the house getting ready, you throw them in the car, you throw them out at the school, and you zip off to your job, and then you slave away to some boss who could absolutely replace you within the week if you drop dead at your desk. They don't give a crap about you, no matter how much you think that you've bonded with them. You probably got to pick up your kids, right? So you're sitting in traffic again. You throw your kids in the car. You race home. You throw everyone out. You fix your dinner real quick. You scream at them to get their homework done.
Your banquet.
You all pass out at night. You wake up and do the same shit over and over.
That probably just gave so many of our listeners a panic attack.
Then they're like, I can't sleep at night. I chug so much coffee. And I'm like, don't you see what you're doing to yourself? Yeah. It's amazing that people are like, I have anxiety. I drink Starbucks all day long to deal with my job and my kids and my husband. My marriage is falling apart because my husband and I don't spend any time together. We don't have anything in common anymore because they're more loyal to their bosses or their coworkers. Then they split up. Then there's how many broken homes? Our entire generation came from broken homes because they were like, well, screw this. It's not working. Let's move on. The homesteading community is completely different. I have seen a few single moms who are like, I like gardening. I'm going to take it up to the next level. Get goats and chickens and all this other stuff. For the most part, you see families where both parents are present, and I'm not knocking anyone who's gotten a divorce. I came from a broken home myself, but the future is not only on the farm, but it is also in maintained marriage, and I really do believe that. When you have strong priorities, aligned goals, and you're working together for something bigger than yourself, you're not just putting your labor towards a company that doesn't care about you, that makes widgets or whatever. You're not investing in your future. Your 401k is not going to feed you as long as you don't know how to actually put a seed in the ground and harvest it and preserve it.
There's a lot of trouble that comes from large cities, too. When you talk about marriages, a lot of broken marriages happen in the city because they're bored. They have everything they want at an arm's reach. And so they can literally just do and get whatever they want whenever they want to. And that's an issue for men and women alike in large cities. But when you're in the country and you have to do hands-on projects and you're with your family, you realize what's more important. And so that's got a lot to do with the vast difference in divorces that happen in the country versus in the city.
And I think a lot of that boredom coincides with being so busy all the time. And then when you do have a free moment and you do have some downtime, you don't know what to do with yourself because you're so disconnected from what is making you feel better and what is healthy, because you just go about your day in this zombified state that you don't even know how to make yourself happy anymore. You want to curl up and hide from the world because the world will suck you dry of your soul. And you're so distracted and so busy, you don't even know what's going on in the world. You don't know which information is true. You just hear and take in what the mainstream news is feeding you in the background while you're cooking dinner, and then you go and regurgitate that to somebody else and you hold that as truth, and then that person thinks that it's true because you say it with so much conviction and you don't know why, but that's part of the programming of what the news does to you. That's one of the many facets of the entrapment in this country that its citizens are being bombarded with from every direction. We're so busy, have no energy to figure out what's exactly going on. It is living in the matrix, and people use the phrase asleep so loosely, but that's literally what being asleep is. In a trance and living this daily monotony and being so unhappy, but not being able to pinpoint where it's coming from or what changes exactly you need to make with your life, it's a trap. Why do you think they call places that sell drugs in impoverished areas the trap? It's because it's a trap. They were set up to sell drugs there to be arrested for selling those drugs. How many people do you know owns a poppy field? Where does all the cocaine come from that's been flooding our streets for decades? It's a physical trap and it's a mental trap.
To all the people out there listening that just heard that, just because you live in a city doesn't mean you have to escape your problems in any kind of negative way. But I wanted to ask you guys a question, and I will get to that question after this very short break. There was a really massive response from my personal friends that live in cities that are interested in living in the country. Can you guess what their major issue was?
The smells?
The what?
The smells.
Okay. Rob?
Being trapped in a career, not having, I don't know. Only thing I could think of is money and being tied to careers.
It's Wi-Fi.
Oh, Wi-Fi.
It was Wi-Fi.
Oh, my God. So I actually have family members that live not far outside of town, down a dirt road, and they are not able to get internet where they are. It would be really expensive to run internet down their road, and they've talked about pitching in with a couple of their neighbors to get it done, but it's super expensive, so they're moving.
You can literally order satellite internet. There was this thing called Clear. It comes in the mailbox. You set it up. It can go wherever you go. $50 a month. It's completely unlimited internet. And it comes from the satellites and it goes to literally anywhere you want. So where there's a will, there is a way.
But what if you have like really bad cell signal? Like at their house, they have really bad cell signal. They make hotspots with their phones, but it's spotty.
So they invested all of this money and all this time into this property and then decided to move because of their Wi-Fi signal?
There's more to it than that, but that's one of the factors. Now that they have teenagers that need these things for school and stuff, it's becoming a real issue. But there are other factors as well.
That makes sense. But can't they go to the library or something? Or
is that a thing that we do? Do we go to the library to do homework anymore?
We can bring that back. Why don't they go actually meet their neighbors and make a connection with their neighbors that maybe have better Wi-Fi?
That's part of the problem, is they having some issues with their neighbors.
Ooh, tell us more.
That is a common issue out in the country, because you've invested a lot of money in your livestock and your neighbor lets his dog run loose because that's what people in the country do. That's like one of the questions I see the most in the homesteading groups is, can I shoot this dog that keeps coming? Like, that is their livelihood. That is how they eat and that is how they make money. And here comes Pitbull from down the road and comes and rips up all their livestock. Like, you would want to shoot that dog too.
Have your livestock properly prepared for that kind of stuff. Have an electric fence. Have something.
I understand both sides.
Yeah, like, don't let your dog run loose in the country either if it's going to run over to the neighbor's farm and harass their animals. You're responsible for your dog.
That's how we got our dog. Somebody just dropped her off.
We saw our puppy's father drive by in a golf cart, and I went, wow, that's definitely the daddy.
He was already prepared with a wave before he even saw us. He waved at me. He already had his hand up before we could even see
him. He was ready, yes. He was waving at me, and I was like, wow. Thanks for the dog. I was outside playing with the dog, too, ironically. So that's hilarious. But coming in at a close second, what do you guys think? Next to Wi-Fi, the people that wanted to live in the country that came from cities needed what the most?
Stores. Conveniences.
I want to say Amazon, but that seems kind of like the same level as Wi-Fi. Like, you can still get stuff.
Yeah, we have Wi-Fi out here in the country, and we have Amazon. But yes, it was like favorite stores and conveniences. Someone was like, well, first Wi-Fi, second video game stores. Robert and I have to drive 15, 20 miles to go to the grocery store. So not very convenient.
If you live on a farm, you're not going to have that much time for video games. I don't think.
Our Xbox and our PS4 broke a few days before we came here, and we got here, and sometimes we wish we had that, but for the most part, we don't even think about it. We're doing many other things that are far more important than playing video games.
It's so much more fun out here. You can do whatever you want. No one can tell you no.
That is one of the biggest reasons that we decided to purchase land out in the country and build a farm, because we had some run-ins when
with the feds.
When we first got together, we had an apartment and it was on the ground floor, and we quickly got very tired of hearing everyone come and go, because it was a lot of like younger people that would come at like 3 or 4 in the morning, drunk as hell, walking past our apartment, and the dog would bark. That was pure hell, because, you know, you have to get up and go to work in the morning, and no. We were like, grow up. So we were like, okay, clearly we're too grown up for this place. We need to get out of here. So we rented a house in a lovely gated community. Absolutely beautiful place. Quiet corner. We had a cul-de-sac all to ourselves. I had a creek in the backyard where I could sit out on my porch and watch baby deer playing. It was a stream.
You better not say creek.
It was a babbling brook.
Ooh.
What does that even mean? What is babbling about the brook?
It's babbling. It's going bloop, 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 bloop.
Sounds like words if you're listening closely. Nature talks to you, Rob. Don't you hear it?
I know that.
He should know. Doesn't know. All he hears is insulation lately.
So I was like, this is lovely. Let me have a little fire. Me and my friend are going to have a beer or two and make a little fire in our fire pit in the backyard and just enjoy this lovely day. We're going about our business. And like you said, Tina, here comes a man on his golf cart ready to tear me a new one and tell me that that was absolutely against the rules and he was going to fine me $25,000
for
setting an illegal fire.
You probably had it burned then.
No, not at the time. It was in the rules of the gated community.
Oh, yeah, it was a little caldy.
So we were like, F this place, and we bought a house in a neighborhood with no HOA. The people behind us had chickens, and it was lovely for a short while until the army made us leave. And then we rented the house out, and I don't recommend renting out your house. If you don't have to, don't do it. So that was fine. It was a fine neighborhood for us. But while we were living in Michigan, we lived just off 16 Mile There was traffic every minute, every hour of the day.
Ew.
There was a police station right across the road from our neighborhood, and they were going off all the time. They would go tearing out of there, sirens blaring. Pretty much it was just loud all the time. We had to deal with neighbors all the time. We did have some really great neighbors on either side of us, but one of the neighbors moved away and then somebody else moved in and they were mowing the grass literally every other day. I'm not even kidding.
Oh, you told me about this.
I went off on Facebook. I was posting about this all the time. Like, they're mowing the grass again. I have to get out of here. I can't stand it anymore. And that was the tipping scale for me.
Didn't you get to build a really pretty greenhouse while you were up there in Michigan?
So the positive aspect was that in the time that we were in Michigan, we became really big into gardening. Like, we had been wanting to get into gardening, but at that time we had two greenhouses.
Yeah, in your intro video, you show how into gardening you really are.
We grew a garden the first year, and then the next year, every single one of our adjoining neighbors also had gardens.
That's awesome.
It's addictive and it's contagious.
I wonder if a green thumb is just as contagious.
You can trade some of your Russian kale for some asparagus, get some zucchini and some bean sprouts in there, some bell peppers, some radishes in the mix, and that's how you make friends with the neighbors so that you can use their Wi-Fi.
Somebody's cucumbers actually grew through the fence and they were like, you can just have them. And I was like, cool.
If somebody offered me free cucumbers, I would be excited.
Oh, I was super excited, especially because I know that I inspired them to plant those cucumbers to begin with.
Well done.
So while we were there, we decided that we definitely wanted to get into farming. And while we were there, we researched as much as we possibly could so that when we came back to North Carolina, we could hit the ground running with, you know, buying some land out in the country and building a house on it, which is where we're at right now. I'm super thankful to be out of the city, out away from the rat race, because I don't do the rat race. I don't have a 9-to-5 job. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I'm homeschooling my children. I like a slower pace. I don't like for anyone else to dictate our pace. Like, I really like us to wake up naturally and not to an alarm clock. And I like for us to dictate when we're going to eat and what we're going to do during the day. And if we're all tired, then we can all lay down and take a nap. There's no boss telling me that I have deadlines and all of that. I don't do that. I don't play that anymore. It's terrible for mental health. That's why we have such a jacked up mental health system in this country in terms of the clientele is through the roof. And since COVID, it's only gotten worse. I'm definitely much happier when I can't hear traffic.
What you just said about wanting to do this and you having your green thumb makes me want to talk about all of our family histories. Do any of you guys have farmer in your blood?
I don't believe so. I know that we made hats and belts and stuff like that. I don't know if farming was tied in with any of that, but definitely a lot of craftsmanship of knitting and leather.
That's homesteading.
Well, I know that my grandmother and great-grandmothers were really big into gardening, but I grew up in Germany, in Bavaria, which is the southernmost state of Germany. There's a lot of farming there. It's very heavy into agriculture. I grew up in a very small German village that consisted primarily of farmers. And every house pretty much had a little farmyard. I could walk down the street to like a little farm that had rabbits, and they would have goats, and there would be like an old lady milking her goat, and she would let all of us village children try the goat's milk fresh from the goat. It was like still warm. And at the time, that was so special to me because I was like, wow, that is so cool. Like, even at a really young age, I kind of recognized that it was like a precious kind of life. I remember when her sow gave birth and there was so many little piglets and they were like, you can help try to catch them. And they were so fast. And I was like, yeah, I totally want to hold one until I tried to catch one. And then I was freaking out because they were like strong and fast and sliding all over the place and screaming. And I was like, this is too much for me. People had horses and cats would just turn up. And that was the kind of life that was just perfect to me. I kind of glorify that life a little bit because I could take my dog and walk out into the country for hours and not see another person or feel any kind of threat whatsoever. Farm fields, gravel roads, maybe somebody on a horse would go by, and that was it.
It's really funny because my maiden name in Norwegian literally means farmstead.
Aww.
Yeah. Half of my Norwegian side of the family does still farm. And so I feel like my father came full circle and came back to the farmstead. In the Philippines, my mom, she lost her father before she was even born, but maintained and kept the land that was her father's when he died in World War II. Chicken farms and rice paddies, and that's in the Philippines. And then here in the States, the Norwegian side of the family owns a lot of land up north. So I grew up going back and forth every other year, Philippines, North Dakota, Philippines, North Dakota.
Oh my God, what a change.
Yeah, but it was both farming. So I feel like I was actually meant to live this kind of life. And I am very much an extroverted person, as you both know. So it's funny because I love people a lot, but I really like my space. I feel like definitely living in the country is way more for me because, as you said, it's a slow-paced lifestyle. It can be very calming depending on your circumstances. It's beautiful to wake up when you want to and look out at what you have.
Very true. There's a lot of things that I've learned here within the 3 months that we've been here that I never would have gotten a chance to learn otherwise. And I realized how important it is to learn certain things, certain trades. I taught myself how to plumb. The only reason why we're living in this place right now is because I fixed all the plumbing.
Wow.
And that was just from doing it and learning from mistakes and literally having no guidance whatsoever. So I can consider myself a journeyman plumber within like a week
journeyman.
Of doing it.
I think that's badass.
Ripping out insulation and putting back insulation is very important, obviously, for the heat of your house. Your dad helped me with that, Tina. So that was cool to learn.
Installing bath and shower fixtures with plumbing included.
Okay, you totally made that sound like an Ace Hardware commercial.
Ace is a place with a helpful hardware store.
Folks.
With plumbing included. Moving on. Chopping down a whole entire forest with a machete and a chainsaw.
Knowing how to build a fire. Knowing the ins and outs of how to have a functioning household from scratch. I'm not so much into electricity. That's the next step. I've shocked myself with
thousands
of volts many times.
I saw the shocks go over your head.
I was ripping out an old furnace from the house. It was like all rusty and stuff.
Without turning it off.
And there was a wire in there. You know, they weren't connected to anything as far as I was concerned. But apparently one of them was. So I was messing with the wires and it shocked me and like sent so much electricity through my body. I literally threw my screwdriver across the house and I was like, oh my God. And it happened a few more times before I learned my lesson, which is kind of stupid of me.
You two are like a super young version of Chip and Joanna Gaines.
Stop.
I don't know who that is, but I'm trying to be more like Chip.
They live in Texas, first of all.
Yes, I was on their show.
She has some kind of like Asian descent. He has learned how to do pretty much everything that you need to do to remodel a house. And they have a ranch. Oh my God, you guys. Okay, all you need is like 7 more children.
I was literally on their TV show.
You were?
Yeah, on DIY.
Oh my God, that was produced by Chip and Joanna Gaines.
Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah. I remember now. It rings a bell. I remember Chip.
Yeah.
What? Did you meet them?
Yeah, of course.
Oh my God, that's so crazy. Be them. That is so cool.
Well, yeah, that's what we're aiming for. Rob, do you have anything else to say?
You wouldn't learn that there's all of these different facets of remodeling or
making a house from its basic state function.
You go and do it and you're like, oh, this is how everything works. Like, I've wondered all my life how everything works. So I've learned so much about how to do that, how to remodel the interior, the exterior, I feel really blessed to have been able to have the opportunity to learn how to do that. And it's just so crazy, just like a year ago, how far behind I was in knowing how to do anything that actually means anything to survival, and how far behind everybody is as a society. And I'm not trying to brag, but as a society, learning how to not rely on the system in order to survive.
You wouldn't know how to do any of that if you were some schmuck in an office just wasting your life away under fluorescent lighting. You would never have learned any of that stuff. You would still be stuck wondering. You would be sitting there filling out your whatever and being like, gosh, I really would rather be out on a farm doing something with my hands.
And you're so distracted by what you're going to do on that hour that you have left in the day later on, what Netflix show you're going to watch. And then we get so brainwashed and we get so, Dawn, you say this a lot, far removed from the actual human experience that you wouldn't even know the first thought to even have in order to contribute to
transferring yourself to a lifestyle of actual fulfillment and not feeling the pressures of a metropolitan area where you breathe in all of this stagnant air and bring so many woes to your life.
What about the people that are worried about finding jobs? Because it's really unfortunate that they just can't pick up and move if they even really want to. And with the pandemic situation, it seems like we're taking more of a term for like not the best. So isn't there a program that you've mentioned before, Dawn, like WOOF of our previous episodes?
Yep. That is Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. You can apply to different farms that have entered themselves into the program, and you can work at these farms. You can live there. You can work. You can earn a stipend, depending on the farm and what they have set up for you. But you can also gain knowledge in the time that you're there. And that's probably the most valuable part of it. So a lot of people travel around from farm to farm and do this and learn stuff before they start their own farm. But Tina, what you were saying about people worrying about jobs, I think COVID has given us the perfect opportunity to return to the homestead, because a lot of companies have just seen how easy it is for them to have employees that work remotely. Because not only does it work well enough for a lot of employees that would otherwise just be sitting at a desk, but also they are saving money on overhead when they don't have to keep the lights on for all these people. They save money and can invest that money into other things while their people are working remotely from their home. That has freed up a lot of people to either move or travel, which, okay, we can't really travel right now because Americans are not allowed to go anywhere. But you could travel around the country if you wanted to while working remotely. So I think it's a good time to do both.
Right. I completely agree with that. And I can definitely see the affinity of leaving the city right now, especially during COVID or any time, really, because you learn all of these skills that you should really, as a human, already know. These are things that are built into our reptilian brain that are becoming forgotten, like we talked about with neuroplasticity. It's really funny because it really is real, and we're forgetting what our true roots as humans are.
What's sad, Tina, is that I've seen a lot of people asking, what is my purpose and how do I find my purpose? And, you know, intuitively, I see in the collective, there's a big crying out for purpose, a lot of lack of purpose. Yeah. And I think it's what Rob was talking about. You're distracted and your attention and energy is focused towards something that doesn't have anything to do with furthering your own self, your own family, and your own generation.
Right.
It's going someplace into somebody else's pocket that you never even see. You don't know what it is that your labor has actually achieved at the end of the day. Whereas on the farm, you do. You can see it. You can physically see what you've done. I'm sure Rob has that experience on a daily basis. Where,
like with his plumbing.
Any of those projects that he's done. I mean, we watched him build a giant coop for guineas.
Yeah.
You know, RIP.
And I was so
but
proud.
At the same time,
yeah,
it was like he's never done anything like that before, and he did it on a deadline.
We still have one guinea left. The neighbor gave us a second guinea, so now they can have guinea babies.
Make
so we can
friends with your neighbors.
Yeah.
So I think that when you put your effort into making something for your life that is a physical thing, or you invest your energy into plants that are going to feed you or animals that are going to somehow take care of you symbiotically, then you have a sense of purpose. You go to bed knowing exactly who you are and exactly what your function is and what your role is in your community. If you live in a city, you may be somewhat disconnected or misdirected for that.
Since you're in the middle of the move from city to country, can you tell the listeners a little bit about what the deciding factors were for you?
I need to be someplace where I can walk out of my own door, look around, and everything that I see is mine. It's not disrupted by power lines and roads and other people's business. I need to be connected to the land, and I need to be someplace where I can sit down in the grass unbothered by anything and let bugs crawl on me or whatever. You know, when I was in Michigan, even though I had so much going on around me, I was very connected to the garden and the yard itself. I was really communing with the spirit of that yard. Those trees had their own energy that they shared amongst each other. They had their own language and their own music. They invited me into that. I became part of that. But it was temporary, and I always knew it was going to be temporary, but I never really knew how much I was going to end up being connected to a piece of land like that. And so I knew that that was going to be incredibly important for me going forward, and that I wanted to teach my children that sensation as well, and to understand that that is the highest calling, to be connected to the land, because we're humans. Our feet are meant for standing on the earth. And
boots were made for walking. I'm sorry, I had to.
It's super important to me that my children have the kind of life that I grew up with, where I could just walk out into the country. I could walk over to my neighbor's garden and eat berries as a snack and keep going. I want that for my children more than anything. And I would literally do whatever it takes to have that to give to my children.
That's a really good answer. So when you left cities and you had chances to live in the country, and even more so of a chance to live in the country now, when you lived in the city, you're saying you really did feel completely disconnected.
I felt distracted and I felt depressed. I spent a lot of time inside or trying hard to like isolate myself. It was really confusing because there's a part of me that just needs to be in the woods all the time. But then there's another part of me that wants to go to California Pizza Kitchen and take shots and eat my face off. And I had to be willing to leave that part of me behind that just wants to walk through Hobby Lobby sipping Starbucks. And as much as I love that kind of life, it's shallow and fleeting. And it always left me more depressed afterwards, after that retail therapy wore off. Yeah. It was not as deeply lasting as when I would go hiking or sit by a river or something. That was always way more nourishing to me. And it just was very obvious that I needed to get out of there.
It's funny because a lot of the people that responded on that Facebook post I made, I was very surprised that a lot of them said country. I thought there would be more beach, especially in this time of year. And for me personally, I feel so much more cleansed being by water, but there's a certain feeling that has a very strong correlation with being by water and being in the country. So there's this certain peace that you get from both. I felt that last week when we went for Rob's birthday, when we were at the lake, and I was just so happy and free. So it was really funny to me that I got a lot less beach responses than I thought I would. And then, of course, Chris, another of our panel members, said that he would rather live in outer space.
That was very cleansing, being in the water. And yeah, that was a shocking revelation to me, too, that most people said that they wanted to be in the country. And I don't know if a lot of that is attributed to the virus or if people have had that mindset before. I'm sure it's a mixture of both. I think it's really important to talk about all these things, but I also think it's important to provide solutions to people. you can do whatever you want. I understand a lot of people are at a disadvantage when it comes to relocating, going wherever you want to. But if that's something that you really want to do, you can manifest that for yourself. We can all do that. And if that's something that you truly desire in your heart and in your spirit,
you can make it happen. Anybody can.
I completely agree. And when it comes to manifesting that kind of life, if you immediately respond to this with the thought of, I could never do that, then there's a lot of stuff that you're missing out on.
Right. We had another responder coming from Facebook. Her name is Jalen Blunt. She grew up in a city, but she prefers the country lifestyle. She will be on an upcoming episode in the coming month, and she's made a good point about feeling more at peace, like we all have said, when living in the country or being by water or what have you. And there's more freedoms on what you can do with your land and what types of animals you can own. So, Dawn, since you're in the middle of a move, you have the want to be self-sustaining. But I want to know, are there any particular animals that you definitely need to have?
Right now, on the very top of my list, I need to have alpacas.
I know
I'm
about
like
this.
Completely obsessed right now with alpacas and have been studying them pretty hard for a few months. I actually have kind of a 5-year plan, and I want to start out with guineas like you guys, but mostly for bug control, snake control, that kind of thing. Guineas, and my husband really wants ducks, so we're gonna go that route. We'll probably have chickens too. I've always wanted goats, but I recently went to...
I want a goat.
You can't have just one. That's not fair to the goat. You have to at least have two or three.
Is the billy goat a necessity? Does he kind of keep everybody in line?
Billy goats, aka bucks, fun fact, they stink really bad. And yes, they do keep the rest of the goats in line, but you don't necessarily have to keep them.
I, in particular, would like to get Angora goats because they have a super soft wool that they grow. You shear them twice a year.
And you don't gotta kill them, too. You can just shave their wool off and make things.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know.
It's called mutton, and it's very tasty in a curry.
Certain ethnicities like to mate with their goats.
Anyway.
Yeah. I taught him that.
He taught me that.
Good job, Tina. That's not going to be happening on our farm, for sure.
Yeah, I know that. Do
don't come to my farm, Rob.
I'm not going to mate with him.
Tina, don't get him any goats.
Yeah, I'm good, John. I don't want your goats or alpacas for sexual use.
Do alpacas have like a sweet, gentle side to them? Or are they all just hawking up loogies and spitting in your face?
Okay, first of all, the spitting thing is kind of a big fallacy. The llamas are the ones that spit, and they spit at each other, and people get caught in the crossfire. Some people, I think, get spit at by their llamas, and I think that's kind of a fluke. For the most part, alpacas are so docile that you need to have some type of guardian animal with them because they cannot defend themselves at all.
Like a donkey?
So donkeys are recommended. Large guardian dogs are recommended. Livestock guardian dogs. And also people like to pair them with llamas because llamas don't take no shit from nobody. And I love them. It's awesome. I can't
That's so funny so because bad. I really, really want a llama. Rob, if you could pick any animal, what would you have?
I was really intrigued by the two mules down the road. They were inseparable. They would see us walking the dog down the road. They would hear us from a mile away, and they would come up literally conjoined at the hip. And they just wanted to chill and hang out. They're being funny. I feel like they're cracking jokes at each other. They're just side headbutting each other and like, we're putting on a little show for us, and they just seem really, like, charismatic animals. And they weren't threatening to us, you know. They were just playing around. They wanted some friends. And
I was about to say, Rob, you are so adorable, but then you said that thing about the humping. I'm good.
Tina said that. Anyways, a donkey or a mule. We have a donkey on our road, separate from the mules that go on the other way. It's a little area in this person's front yard where they have a donkey and then they have a bunch of goats. The donkey always somehow gets out of the fence, and it's always just in the middle of the road whenever I'm trying to drive down the road, like to go anywhere. And it's always chilling in the middle of the road. I'll be driving the car and then it'll be right there, and I'll honk at it like, the hell out of my way, donkey. it'll run down the road as I'm driving. Like, I'm chasing it. It, like, makes me chase it with the car. But I'm just trying to drive. And it'll just be so mad, just, like, whipping its head back and forth. And then I have to honk really loud for it to veer off into somebody's yard. But it's always there looking for a standoff. But I love that goat.
The goats, though, they get in the middle of the road, too. There'll be, like, 15 of them.
This guy doesn't care about his livestock.
They come back.
He doesn't care about fence repairs. He just lets the donkey destroy his fences. And the goats get out. The goats are, like, a mile down the road. But they're always there, though. They always come back.
Very loyal goats.
And nobody cares. They're eating, you know, all the neighbor's grass and everything, so they don't have to mow as much and stuff. So it's a communal understanding that those goats are allowed to roam free and do whatever they want.
They're living their best life out in the country.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, we definitely want to hear, if you follow us on Facebook, whether you would like to move to the country or not, and if you have, so please follow us on Facebook at the Psyche-Delic Podcast or on Instagram at psyche.delicpodcast. All of our links will be in the description. I love you guys so much. Dawn, you enjoy your Myrtle Beach candies and have a wonderful night.
Thank you, Tina.
Night, guys.